When you find reality is yanked violently from straight ahead to the hard insane right, you know you're off the beaten path. Defenestrate Media and The Left Show present The Sidetrack with Jason Williams.
Welcome to The Sidetrack. I'm Jason Williams. This week, an opportunity for us, if you can call it that, considering this is all going to be based, as so many things are going forward, on the recently made public, though redacted, Mueller report. The Mueller report is something that's going to take a while to process, and we're still, at this point, finding out exactly what was in it, including the footnotes, and what it all means. But one thing we do know from the Mueller report so far is that what was detailed, to quote a Republican senator, surprise, Mitt Romney, was shocking and disgusting. And the question now, rising energy behind this for Democrats, is what are you going to do about it? Democrats had already laid the foundation for their own investigations, having taken the House last November, giving them the opportunity to actually follow through on a lot of things that Republicans in their own House investigations, quote unquote, had decided there was nothing to see here. That's going to give Democrats an opportunity to find more information, get it out there in the public eye. And the argument being made in the big question around the Mueller report, should Democrats begin impeachment proceedings against the president, is that let these investigations play out. Speaker Nancy Pelosi even said more specifically that in her mind, there were better ways to hurt Trump through the legislative process. Presidential candidate and everybody's best friend, Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky Cory Booker, said he outright didn't think that impeachment should be discussed, that there shouldn't be talk of impeachment, even after the release of the report. So, Senator Elizabeth Warren showed everyone the answers to all of these questions. And before we get to that, on this question of impeachment, something to keep in mind as we talk about it here over the next hour, as you read the news, keep in mind that almost every argument you're going to see against impeachment, I'm going to try and make the case here that it shouldn't be taken off the table. But every argument you'll see outright condemning the idea of Democrats beginning an impeachment process at this point will, if you dig deep enough or boil it down deep enough, be built on a complete and total fallacy. Two of them, in fact. The first fallacy is one we've talked about here on the Beating Trump series over the last several months many times. The myth of the independent voter. You'll find that at the core of a lot of the arguments against beginning an impeachment process at this point, having seen at least what we have from the Mueller report. The myth being that there is this block of mysterious voters out there that are truly independent and just want the two parties to get along and get things done. They do not exist. They don't. Now, I don't mean that these people don't exist. I mean this myth doesn't exist. These are partisan voters who have only chosen to be independent on paper. And they don't necessarily care if the two parties get along. That's just how it's expressed by pundits and lazy reporters. What they actually care about is that problems get solved. And that's a key point to remember as you see the arguments against impeachment bubble up somewhere, either in a passing mention or in a detailed exploration of their case against impeachment Donald Trump, you'll find it rests at least somewhat on that fallacy of the truly independent voter. Senator Elizabeth Warren was the first to step out in what I think was a really bold move on her part. And yeah, cynical side of me says this is being a smart presidential candidate. Maybe she doesn't really believe these things. Maybe it just seems like a smart tactical move. And we'll get into the tactics of impeachment again later on. Senator Elizabeth Warren said to ignore a president's repeated efforts to obstruct an investigation into his own disloyal behavior would inflict great and lasting damage on this country. Warren, in a campaign statement, said the severity of this misconduct demands that elected officials in both parties set aside political considerations and do their constitutional duty. That means, she said, the House should initiate impeachment proceedings against the President of the United States. She did this at a campaign event, and seizing this opportunity was tactically smart of her, I think, because she's also in a position where she has just been bombarding us with policy ideas. Now, this is really early in the race. So you have to remember, presidential candidates at this point in a presidential race are basically laying, they're building a foundation so that they can just keep pointing back to several things as they really get into the heart of campaigning. So Senator Warren, I think, deserves kudos on two fronts. Being so policy driven so far in her campaign, and then taking the opportunity to stand up and say they should begin to take a definitive stance, not based on some sort of wishy-washy Cory Booker bipartisanship chasing independents just want us to get things done and get along myth. Warren is actually just taking a moral stand. She's saying, look at what we know, not beginning an impeachment process at this point, regardless of how it will end, would be irresponsible. So this goes back to a running theme here on the Beating Trump series, and something that anyone who's followed politics over the last 10, 15, 20 years has been frustrated about when it comes to the Democratic Party. And a way that this is often expressed is Democrats don't know what to do with power. Republicans don't know how to govern, and Democrats don't know what to do with power. And it's not always true. And I think Pelosi and the House so far have been very smart and very careful, responsibly careful, about the investigations they have launched to avoid the appearance of, like the Republicans and their Benghazi years. They've been careful, but they've been aggressive. And that's important. And I don't mean to downplay that at all. But is it enough, I think, is a question. So you have Senator Warren saying that's not enough. Saying that regardless of whether Republicans in the Senate would ever actually vote, any of them, to impeach this president, doesn't matter, Warren's saying. She's saying there is a moral or ethical issue here, and Democrats, being in the majority in the House, have a responsibility. And she's right. They do have that responsibility. Impeachment proceedings must begin in the House. And what we do know so far about the president, I think, warrants beginning that process. So now let's break down what impeachment means in contrast to how it's being talked about. So the biggest argument, the most frequent argument against impeaching or beginning an impeachment process right now against this president is that it will go nowhere in the Senate. Republicans aren't going to vote against this president. That's a hell of an assumption. Now, it might be a correct assumption because Republicans have surprised me several times. In fact, I'm at this point surprised I can still be surprised by Republicans and Mitch McConnell specifically. And you have to remember, he will still be there. They've shown no hesitation whatsoever to put politics and elections above all else. So do I think that a lengthy impeachment process that raises the public awareness of the malfeasance of this administration and this president is going to change Mitch McConnell's mind? No. But there are several Republican senators up for re-election in 2020 that are in a different situation than Mitch McConnell. And that gets lost in a lot of this. Conventional wisdom argues that Trump is safe from impeachment because the Republicans in the Senate will never abandon him. They'll never turn on him. That could change over a lengthy impeachment process and the discussions and details that will be put out there in the public eye and public ears in a way that we haven't seen so far. You have to remember the reporting, the knowledge on the Mueller investigation and even the report has been so bits and pieces and spread out over such a long period of time. These voters out there that will make a difference in Senate races and congressional races in 2020, not criticizing them here. They have real lives and they're busy like most of us. Most of them are not walking around with a big picture encapsulation of this whole issue. An impeachment process is going to reduce that ignorance of the big picture. There are some signs as well, recently even, that this idea that Republicans would never abandon Trump, Republicans in the Senate will never abandon Trump, some signs that should be scary to the Trump administration. 2017, July of 2017, Republicans held both the House and the Senate still, passed sanctions against Russia. It wasn't a big news story other than the president being upset about this. That was the news story. But it was actually for Republicans and how they'd behaved so far in the Trump era. It was actually a big step. It was the first big message Republicans, and it wasn't that big, but it was the first big message that Republicans, in contrast with everything else they'd done, this was the most Republicans had criticized the president so far. And it was a baby step, but they did it when they had control of both chambers. Now, losing one chamber, Republicans could become more recalcitrant and more tribal. And they will. But the bill, the Russian sanctions bill, placed restrictions on Trump's ability to lift sanctions. That got lost in a lot of this, but it does signal that Republicans, if they're getting pressure at home, will break with this president. Later that same summer, again, Republicans still in control of the House and the Senate at this point, having their umpteenth Obamacare repeal face plant blow up in their faces and realizing that the Affordable Care Act and the idea of accessible health care itself had become much more popular with even Republican voters, the Republican-controlled Congress and the White House were not able to do something that was basically the biggest thing talked about in congressional races in 2016, which was repeal Obamacare. When the bill ended up getting to the Senate, there were three Republicans who jumped ship. Not a good look for the president, but behind that is this willingness on big issues to remember they're representing voters in a state rather than a party. Now, again, I'm not saying we should have faith in Republicans on this and therefore impeachment proceedings couldn't possibly backfire on Democrats. What I'm saying is there are more cracks in this conventional wisdom than people realize. 20 House Republicans voted against the 2017 GOP health care bill to replace Obamacare, and six of those same House members retired. Nine of them won re-election, and 4 lost. What I'm saying there is the Republicans, no clear message was sent to Republicans that breaking with their party on this one hurt them. Trump's reaction, of course, was news itself, pitched a temper tantrum, and saw some of his lowest popularity ratings of his presidency so far. A year later, Trump hosts Russian President Vladimir Putin. And then there's that super embarrassing press conference in which Trump appears to be Putin's lackey, lapdog, as a lot of the media and pundits were calling it at the time. 14 Republican senators condemned Trump in the strongest statements that they had issued so far about him as president. And then into the fall of 2018, just before the elections, 14 Republican senators, the same ones, spoke out repeatedly about this. So again, the argument I'm making here is that I don't think it's a sure bet to say you couldn't peel off some Republicans in a lengthy, and believe me, it will be lengthy, impeachment proceeding. So that's argument one shot down against impeaching Trump. Argument two that you'll see out there often, really often, way too often, is that impeachment hurt Republicans in 2000 and therefore shouldn't do it. Republicans lost 5 House seats in 2000. That's not a lot. It's more losses than they were expected, but it's not a lot. The geographical pattern of party support in 2000 was almost a carbon copy of every preceding election into the early 90s. Gore's support from states was almost identical to Clinton's. And in the end, a shift of merely 0.25% of state votes, which is tiny when you think of a national popular vote total that year or any year, if you do the math, which political scientists have, thankfully, 17,000 ballots. 17,000 ballots would have reversed 55 electoral votes in Florida, Iowa total. 55 total from the states Florida, Iowa, New Mexico, Oregon, and Wisconsin. These were really close states, especially Florida in 2000. And these were also states where third party candidates Ralph Nader and Pat Buchanan made pretty much a difference. In fact, Nader and the Green Party won only 3% of the national vote total nationwide, far below the 5% that it was necessary to receive the public financing they were shooting for, and far less than what Ross Perot was able to knock out in 1996. But that said, Nader and Buchanan's supporters provided almost exactly the margin of victory for Bush in 2000. So again, Republicans did not lose big in House races. Senate was basically where it should have been for the politics and the timing of that election. And, well, you know, Bush won. Big disagreement over how he won. Thank you, Supreme Court. But the fact that the race was so close in the first place, that, again, Gore, 17,000 ballots would have shifted 55 electoral votes and completely changed the outcome of that election in our nation's history. My point being that this was a really close nail-biter election. To determine, to divine that the impeachment proceedings Republicans launched in against Clinton, which were so obviously partisan and overwrought that they were never publicly popular. Still, in the end, Republicans didn't really pay a big price for that. I've seen this poll cited several times, December 98 poll showing that the Republican Party's favorability ratings were tanking due to the impeachment process and the fact that the Senate acquitted the president, that just bottomed out support for the Republican Party. And again, disclaimer, I'm not defending that impeachment process at that time. It was silly. It was partisan. And it was transparent as all get out. People really saw it that way, except the most diehard bases of both parties. And still, it didn't really hurt the Republicans much. The December 1998 poll, so frequently cited by the let's not rush to impeachment now crowd out there, what they're leaving out is the exact same polling firm, Keating Holland. This was a Keating Holland CNN poll that was done in December 98. What they're leaving out is that in February of 99, two months later, that huge bottoming out of favorability ratings for the Republicans in the House and the Senate and the candidates and the party evaporated. Gone. So for 2 months, everybody hated the Republicans for trying to impeach Clinton and then having the Senate acquit him. And 2 months later, it's back to a wash. Now, that's just one poll, but it does show cracks in this argument again that impeaching President Trump and then having it fail, having him be acquitted in the Senate, which is likely, though, again, back to argument one, not a sure thing, will hurt Democrats. I don't think the evidence exists for this. Not in recent history. Moving on here, the third argument against impeaching Donald Trump at this point in time is that there isn't bipartisan support for it. That Republicans are against it, Democrats are for it, and the general populace, especially these mythical independent voters, just want everybody to get along. Just move on. Just move on, like we did with the actors responsible for the financial crisis. Like we did with every transgression of the president so far when Republicans were in power. Like we did. This all gets back to this idea, again, this cliche that has so much truth to it, that Republicans don't know how to govern. They sure as hell know what to do with power. Look at the last 2 years. Look at everything going on behind the scenes. Republicans know what to do with power. They have no clue how to govern. And one of the reasons for that is their ideas are awful. They're horrible. And when spelled out, they're never popular. They have to be hidden and lied about. They have to come with a full-fledged propaganda campaign to confuse and muddy the waters to even get to breaking even on public approval. So Republicans can't govern and don't know how with the ideas they have. Democrats, on the other hand, really good at governing. Their ideas are consistently, policy proposals coming out of the Democratic Party for more than a decade now, have been consistently popular with the public when carefully spelled out. But hand the Democrats a little bit of power, and they have no clue what to do. And it always defaults to this, admit it, this is an exaggeration, but it's not too far off. It always defaults to this mentality. What if the Republicans are mean to us? What if these imaginary independent voters bail on us? What if we don't win enough of those Trump states full of Trump voters in 2020? What if pundits write mean things about us in the head? Republicans do not care about these things. And get this. Their electoral track record is about par with the Democrats. And they haven't cared about these things for a generation. Democrats obsessing over electability and likability and where the center is, or chasing the center without ever looking at where the center is like a giant self-imposed albatross hanging around their neck. And they get power again and again, have no clue what to do with it. So scared of a repeat of the Reagan years that they can't act. And they can't, as Senator Elizabeth Warren said, live up to a responsibility they have. One of the most striking op-eds I've seen since impeachment was first mentioned surrounding President Trump was August of 2018. It was written by two men, Michael Conway, who was legal counsel for the House Judiciary Committee during its impeachment inquiry of President Nixon, and John Marshall, who is an assistant professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. They co-wrote this op-ed at the time, basically saying, you know, Republicans are stuck with this president and they need to recognize that and start acting accordingly. What they meant by that is, Republicans, you're stuck with this guy. This guy is here, whether you want to pretend like it or not, and your fate is tied to his. It might be a good time to start standing up to this clown. That's a paraphrase of the entire op-ed. But one of the interesting aspects of the op-ed is Conway, serving as legal counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, writes a lot in the op-ed about this myth of bipartisanship that existed around Watergate. Again, back to the argument that there isn't a bipartisan consensus in polling or in the House and the Senate to move ahead with impeachment. And so we just shouldn't. Democrats just shouldn't exercise that power and that responsibility. Sure, voters sent you into office to get things done. No, again, not to be bipartisan and get along, to get things done. Sure, that's why they sent you there. But let's not. Let's say it's risky. People might be mad. So for a couple of years now, you've seen these reports, lazy reporters and bad faith political commentators, as Conway calls them in his op-ed, express this, quote, frustrated surprise at the steadfast support for the president from most Republicans in the House and the Senate. But Conway says this shouldn't surprise them. And in fact, the fact that it does surprise them, he writes, is why everyone is. And remember, he's writing this in August 2018, and he predicts everyone's going to get this wrong. He writes that when the special counsel's report is finally made public, he believes that impeachment is going to be on the table credibly at that point. And Democrats, he writes in August 2018, should be prepared for that eventuality, and Republicans as well. For the Democrats, he says, well, we'll get to that. For Republicans, he says, might be a good time to start breaking away from this president, to start standing up to him. If you're a Republican in the Senate, maybe a good time, he says, in August of 2018, to start building some distance between you, your party, and this guy before the Mueller report comes out. Republicans obviously haven't done that. For Democrats, he says, remember Watergate, but accurately. Not the way we like to remember it, which is the whole country rising up against a rogue president in this great scandal of the 20th century that just threw the intrepid reporting of Woodward and Bernstein just rewrote the rules and led to the demise of one of the most hated, for a long time at least, presidents in history. And Conway writes in his op-ed, that is not anywhere close to the truth. That's what happened in the movies and the books. No offense to Woodward and Bernstein, their reporting was important. And All the President's Men is still one of my favorite books. But it came late in the process. It was key, but it came late. Conway points out this had been bubbling for a long time. The original, the seed at the center of the Watergate conspiracy and the impeachment trial itself was a tiny little act, tiny little transgression. It really wasn't, from a legal perspective, that big of a deal. But it was everything the president did to be involved, to cover it up, and afterwards, that really mattered. And Conway writes in the op-ed, he said, when critics refer back to Watergate era, the Watergate era as a time of bipartisan commitment to the rule of law over politics, they get it exactly wrong. He says, defending the president at all costs, blaming investigators, and demonizing journalists was all part of the Republican playbook in the Nixon years during this political crisis that led to the resignation, not impeachment, resignation of President Richard Nixon. So he says in the op-ed, Conway says, despite the fact that 32 people and three companies have been indicted so far by the special counsel, only four of 11 Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee joined Senate Democrats earlier this year in an effort to protect that very investigation. And he details throughout this op-ed, you can read it in the New York Times. He goes back to early 1973 and Democrats leading a charge to form that special investigatory committee and the Senate Watergate Committee being created. And he quotes Republican Senator Edward Gurney of Florida, belittling the investigation as, quote, one of those political wingdings that happen every election year. He quotes Ted Stevens, a Republican senator from Alaska, who repeated in advance President Donald Trump's political witch hunt line. Ranking Republican on the Senate Watergate Committee himself, Howard Baker of Tennessee, Conway writes, a man who was lauded for putting principle over party in his support of the investigative committee, actually was meeting behind the scenes to discuss strategies with Nixon. Baker, Conway says, didn't want anyone to know about a meeting with Nixon because he wanted to be seen as credible on this committee. But John Dean wrote in a memo before a meeting with Nixon that that was important. It's documented history. This behind the scenes collaborating, putting on a face of supporting the committee in the investigation. And then once the hearings actually started in spring of 1973, Baker's staff began leaking information about the committee's witnesses and plans to Nixon. Senator Burr here in 2019 was doing the exact same thing during the Senate investigation, tipping the White House off. The New York Times reported just last week about who they were going to be talking to, who Mueller was talking to. The list of witnesses were being passed on to the White House. So this idea that Watergate just bubbled up and it was unavoidable, that there wasn't partisan ship on both sides of support and opposition to a special investigation of Nixon. Conway says in his op-ed, this is just false history. In fact, public opinion didn't solidify around or against Nixon until very late in this process. Really late. Just weeks before the president announced his own resignation. That was the first time you really started to see polling that showed a majority of the public and the more majority of voters saying, yeah, he should probably go. Michael Conway, again, special counsel to the House Judiciary Committee during this impeachment inquiry of President Richard Nixon, closes his op-ed saying that during Watergate, Republicans held their support for Nixon up until the end, up until those tapes emerged. At that point, they had no choice but to drop him. I mean, it was right there in his own voice. The Republicans just said, oh, okay, now we're done. But all of the horrible stuff learned before that, Republicans stood by him. So if you're going to argue today that impeachment proceedings against President Trump shouldn't begin based on what we know so far because the public isn't solidified around it and it won't go anywhere in the Senate because Republicans will never vote to impeach this president, you also have to argue that the investigation and impeachment trial of President Richard Nixon was a mistake and should have never happened. So, three arguments shot down. There is a fourth, sadly. The fourth argument against impeachment of the president is that, well, somehow during the presidential election, primarily that's how it's mentioned, but this argument could be used for congressional races too, that somehow it all we'll talk about, that the only thing Democrats will be able to talk about once they begin an impeachment process, the only thing that Democrats will be able to talk about is impeachment. It'll suck up all the air in the room. And that'll be the whole campaign for 2020. And Democrats won't be able to campaign on ideas. They won't be able to campaign on making some material difference, was a quote I actually saw from a pundit arguing this very thing. That Democrats need to win in 2020. They need to. It's the same thing we hear every time. Democrats, not Republicans. Democrats need to reach across the aisle. They need to reach out to these soft Trump voters and try and win them over. They need to reach out to real America in the heartland. And they can't do that with all this socialism and healthcare access and making the tax code fair. And that's all just silly talk. What they need to do is they need to go out and talk about how, okay, immigrants are bad. Somewhat. They need to go out and say, you know what? Sometimes wars are good. They need to go out sometime and say, you know, it's okay. You have to pay so much for your health care still. It's America. You'll read these op-eds every day that Democrats need to do that. They always need to come towards Republicans. And one of the reasons that this idea won't die is Democrats themselves will never stand up to it outside of verbal criticism and disagreement by actually doing some shit when they're in power. That's why Republicans have won so often in narrative battles and frames. Democrats can't even talk about taxes their own way anymore. And it's been this way for 30 years. And the reason for that, again, is when Democrats have power, they never in a substantial or how about this material way push back against this idea that it's only Democrats that need to come to the center. And the center, of course, is defined by right-leaning pundits and conservative voter analysis. How about this, Democrats? How about we at least explore the idea that that's not where the real center of this country is? How about we toy with the idea right here, while faced with this question of impeachment or no, how about Democrats try using a little bit of their power? Not only Do I agree with Senator Warren in this being a moral obligation of the House to begin impeachment proceedings at this point? I also believe that all of the projections that this will hurt Democrats, if they can't be disproven, they can at least be legitimately criticized. There are a lot of cracks in these arguments. A lot of this has never been tested, not in a generation. You've got an attorney general who we know intentionally mischaracterized the Mueller report. You've got a report itself that details step by step how you can impeach this president. And even making an argument subtly, admittedly, that maybe you should explore that idea. And what do we have? Well, we have the bulk of elected Democratic lawmakers hand-wringing over, you know, basically saying out there saying, you show me a poll in which every single person in this country wants us to move ahead and we'll do it. Stupid. You've got obligations. You've got a responsibility. And you've got an electorate that wants to see you do something, that wants to see you use the power they've handed you. Admittedly, a little bit only in the 2018 election, but still enough. So this whole idea of avoiding the spectacle, which it will become, admittedly, of impeachment and emphasizing some like just trumped up seriousness. Let's look at what happens if Democrats don't begin impeachment process. They avoid that spectacle. Sure, they can talk about anything they want only in 2020. Sure, they don't even have to bring up impeachment. If they scrap it now, it's done. And what they've done, one, they've once again said to voters, vote for us, we won't do shit. And even worse, they have reinforced, by making that decision, a level of credibility and seriousness to what is basically a lunatic carnival barker in the White House. There's a lot at stake here. Core institutions of American democracy. And you're faced with a historical challenge that, by the way, does include, as Eddie Claude Jr. writes, the Fourth Estate. He says political horse races cannot over determine the constitutional responsibility of Congress or the responsibility of the Fourth Estate if we continue to play this as a game, as if the stakes haven't changed, we seal the fate of the country. Claude says the moment, this moment requires, especially of Congress, a focus that has been missing for a long time, and that a lot of us are skeptical Democrats have in them. Now, Claude criticizes the media. That's his job. But he says the media needs to create space for a reasoned and careful deliberation. I think it's going to be a tough one for the media, but you know what would buy him a lot of space to do so? A lengthy impeachment process. And when it comes to that chasing bipartisanship, ask any historian to find and list the decades in the history of this country in which there hasn't been a deep division. You can count them on one hand. Anybody out there that thinks that things are just going to go back to normal when Trump is gone, is an idiot. Trump's own guilt here and his complete unfitness for office are already a matter of public record. Already. So the real question here is, are Democrats, with the power to do so, at least going to make a formal attempt to hold him accountable? Or are we going to do this as Pelosi wants, or at least is saying she wants, right now, through the legislative process, passing bills that will die in the Senate, just like impeachment probably will? Which one of those gets Democrats further? Which one of those lives up to the responsibility entrusted in them by voters? Which one of them lives up to the responsibility and obligation they have constitutionally? And I think more broadly and more importantly, which one of them says, when considering Trump and everything a matter of public record so far alone, this isn't okay. This isn't who we're going to be as a country. That's really what Democrats need to be considering here. And I'll make one final excuse for leadership, not Steny Hoyer. Steny Hoyer just needs to sit down and shut up. This guy has been mushy and soft his entire political career. Shh, Steny. The adults are talking. But I'll make one last excuse for Pelosi and the few that we have so far and the few more we will see saying impeachment shouldn't be talked about right now, that we shouldn't be jumping there quickly right now. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with letting this simmer for just a bit more. Let Republicans, you know, answer a lot of questions in the media. Let a House investigation or two, you know, tick on for a week or so more. The credibility of not rushing to it might be beneficial. The credibility of other investigations might hinge on not rushing to it. And those investigations are important, too. And cynical side of politics here, there's always a bit of theater behind all of this. It might be smart for Pelosi to show at least some skepticism in rushing towards an impeachment trial right now, right as the report drops, and let the pressure to do so build. Or not. So let's make the pressure build. Every elected Democrat out there has a responsibility here. Every registered Democrat has a responsibility here. Sure, the Republicans do too, but they've shown us that's not something they take seriously. We should, even if it makes the next election harder. And the simple idea that you can't have an impeachment process play out and everything that needs to happen around that happen, and the obligation to do so at this point being right there, and at the same time suggest that your candidates can't go out and talk about healthcare at the same, I think we can do both. I'm Jason Williams, and I'll see you next week.